Well, again, thank you for coming out bright and early, and I must congratulate you because I'm sure this is going to be the best session of APHA overall. So you have made a good choice. So today, I want to talk a little bit about trauma and PTSD among transition age youth, as you can see here, the disclosure there. So what I'd like to do within my short amount of time is to present an overview of understanding the challenges faced by transition age youth with serious mental health conditions, such as major depression, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, identify the prevalence and the correlates of PTSD among this group that are enrolled in community mental health services, and then maybe a little bit identify maybe some policy and practice implications of the results from the study that we did of trauma and PTSD among this age group. So first, just to present an overview, and probably if you're here, you already know a lot of this, but anyway, it is still early, looking at the challenges faced by transition age youth with serious mental health conditions. First off, a lot of them have very limited social networks, at least with the population that I've worked with. Most have been in the child welfare system of care for many years, so they have very limited connections with their family of origin, and also alienation from the general community. And usually for this age group, there's very inadequate services, as there's a big disconnect between the child and adolescent mental health system and the adult mental health system. So this age group that I'm talking about, I mean, transition age youth can be a wide age range, but what I'm focusing on is ages 16 to 21. But a lot of that, in that period of time, a lot of the child and adolescent services are ending, and the adult services really have yet to really pick up or are not at all enticing to this age group. And also there's a lot of decreased engagement in this age group of employment and education activities. Young adults more likely to be 3.5 times less likely to be engaged in education or employment, which obviously does not bode well for long-term outcomes for this age group. After they are done with healthcare services or emancipated from the child welfare system. Specifically looking at trauma among this in this population. So overall, first off, there would be an estimated 2.4 million 18 to 26-year-olds have a serious mental health disorder. And you're looking at estimates of trauma exposure and PTSD within this age group. There's a lot of different estimates depending upon if it's a clinical or community sample, of course, but around adolescence, it could be anywhere between 42 and 44% with PTSD, and studies have shown between 19 and 20% among adolescent boys that have PTSD with a serious mental health condition. And this is compared to a general population with an estimate of about 8% of girls and 2.3% of adolescent boys having PTSD. And this obviously, and not surprisingly, has a huge public health impact on this age group. Individuals with trauma and PTSD are more likely to have comorbid psychiatric diagnoses. As a result, they're more likely to use more services. And they're also more likely to engage in self-harming and delinquent behavior, which again has a lot of long-term implications for their lives as adults. So my study aims were to, and looking at, and I'll describe a little bit about the population in the next slide, but looking at the prevalence and correlates of PTSD in a small group of transition age youth that were receiving residential services and case management services at a community mental health agencies. And my hypothesis was that PTSD would be positively associated with females, mood disorders, and substance abuse. And in terms of different trauma exposures, that sexual abuse and exposure to a greater number of kinds of traumatic events would increase the likelihood of having a PTSD diagnosis. The setting this study was done in is an agency called Thresholds Psychiatric Rehabilitation in Chicago, Illinois. It's a huge agency that serves both adolescents and primarily actually adults with severe mental illness. And they have a specific young adult program that is composed of supported group housing, case management, individual group therapy, psychiatry services, employment and education services. They serve on average about maybe about tops about 100 adolescents, young adults at any point in time. And over half of them are in the custody of the state of Illinois and have had a lot of turnover in their foster care living situations that have led to them becoming in residential foster care settings. So. So what I did is looking at doing a cross-sectional study design. I looked at one point in time pulling data of the transition age youth that were open to the agency at a specific date, and looking at the data that is routinely collected by our licensed mental health professionals from the electronic medical record. And looking at and pulling a specific variables, independent variables, looking at questions that are asked about the different kinds of abuse and trauma that the adolescents have been exposed to. And while they're certainly asked this in terms of self-report, because most of these have had interactions with the child welfare system, there's a lot of verification through the, the child welfare reports. It's just not really that surprisingly, if it was left to self-report, it was very much underreported when they would compare that to when they looked at people's records. A dependent variable was a diagnosis by a psychiatrist of PTSD. And then also looked at some of the demographic variables that I've listed here. And then clinical variables, looking at primary diagnosis, which I divided into mood or psychotic disorders because of the sample size, which was only 84. And there's also, with this population, really high rates of co-occurring mental illnesses. So I looked at co-occurring ADHD, other behavioral disorders, substance use disorders. And really, in this sample, I think the average number of diagnoses was like 2.5 or something. So it's very rare for anyone to have just one diagnosis. Most of them also had the behavioral disorder or ADHD along with it. And then looking at history of suicide attempts, hospitalizations as a child, and also just overall history of violent behavior. So for data analysis, I looked just basic chi-square analyses to look at the relationship between exposure to different kinds of trauma and PTSD, and also looking at the demographic and clinical characteristics of those youth with and without PTSD. And using t-test analysis to compare number of types of traumatic events, not number of traumatic events, but number of types of traumatic events experienced by youth with and without PTSD, which I would say is certainly, and we can, I'll bring it up later, is a limitation that we just have whether these types of abuse happen, not the frequency with which they happened, which is obviously a limitation. And then using logistic regression to determine which types of traumatic events and cumulative exposure to trauma predicted diagnosis of PTSD. So first off, it's strikingly high, but in terms of looking at some of the other literature, maybe not a surprise, but 94% of this sample had been exposed to at least one kind of traumatic event or experience in their lifetime. And of those, 36% of the sample had a diagnosis of PTSD. There was actually no statistically significant differences between those with and without PTSD. This I used a Bonferroni correction, so I had a smaller p-value than 0.05. But there were trends where females and those who were involved with the criminal justice system were more likely to have PTSD. And youth with ADHD and psychotic features were actually less likely to have PTSD. Briefly, I think it is telling to look at of these different kinds of abuse, the overall percentages. The highest kind of abuse was actually neglect, and that was overall 63% of the sample had experienced some kind of neglect, which again, given they were part of the child welfare system, is not a huge surprise. The second highest was physical abuse, in which 61% of them had experienced some kind of physical abuse. And then sexual abuse, overall 49% of the sample had experienced some kind of sexual abuse. In terms of then the number and kinds of abuse, sexual abuse was associated with PTSD diagnosis, and there were trends that physical abuse and number of kinds of abuse were associated with PTSD. And then looking at the logistic regression, history of sexual abuse was associated with PTSD. So I think a lot of these findings are very consistent with other literature. I mean, there is a high rate of PTSD among youth with psychiatric disabilities, and this supports that. It is a unique setting in that it's a group residential setting. There's a lot of evidence to show that sexual abuse would be associated with PTSD, and also because of, I think, in relationship to that sexual abuse, a trend of females being more likely to have PTSD than males. I think there was some surprises in that there was a lack of relationship between PTSD and the substance abuse diagnosis. But what I would say here with this sample is what I've seen is substance abuse was greatly sort of underreported or underdiagnosed. I think it was sort of among the program, not sure where that line was drawn between adolescents, young adults that were experimenting with alcohol and drugs versus when it became a real problem. So I really would not be surprised if that was very much underreported in the electronic medical record. And honestly, I think partially two issues of sort of diagnostic overshadowing when you have people with all like behavioral disorders and severe mental illnesses, that being something that often got overlooked. I thought one of the interesting findings was this relationship between involvement with the criminal justice system and PTSD, which is certainly something that would be useful to have further research into and looking at, which I'm actually very excited to listen to the presentation, the presentation later on today. My knowledge too of this program is that there were frequently bouts of adolescents that were going in jail and being arrested, and a lot of like large groups at a time that would experience this and just be out of the residential setting for a while, in and out of jail. So it's a problem. Certainly one of the limitations is this is a retrospective clinical record data, and I don't know how many of you work in clinical settings, but you could always say, you know, what is the accuracy of data that was gotten from the electronic medical record. What I can say is that there was really only two people that were doing these assessments among all these adolescents and young adults, so at least it was a pretty consistent people that were evaluating them and doing the intake assessments. And there also were then other clinicians, therapists, and then the psychiatrist recording the diagnoses. There was the biggest shortcoming on the trauma end. There was the lack of standardized measures that were being used. It was general questions around this exposure to these different types of abuse. But what I can say there is that, like I said earlier, that there was a great deal of verification in the child welfare records to see if it was accurate or not. And of course, it was a modest sample size. I think in conclusions, certainly, and again, just recapping that the increased risk of trauma and PTSD in this group is an important thing that we should be doing more research on, and also the increased risk of criminal justice involvement is noteworthy. I think the implications are that we should certainly have more systematic screening in these kinds of settings for both more routine and validated measures being used with this population to see what people have been exposed to, and routine use of clinical assessments for diagnosing of PTSD. And of course, the improvement of the quality and the amount of PTSD services for this population, whether it be cognitive behavioral, DBT, things like that, which they were doing some of at this program, which is certainly useful. And I think, but one of the things I'd like to point out is sort of the implications of this for the PTSD diagnosis and a criterion A1 debate over do we need to have these major traumatic events to qualify for PTSD, or some of these micro-traumatic events could be equally important. And when I spoke with a psychiatrist, a lot of them said that many of the young adults that didn't have a PTSD diagnosis, they stated, really had a lot of the sort of clinical characteristics of having PTSD, but what they had suffered was very long-term neglect and more micro-abuses in their life, and so they didn't really warrant an official PTSD diagnosis, and they found that very frustrating. So it's something to consider here, too, to see the lack of differences in the PTSD versus the non-PTSD group, to say, you know, we were looking at it and saying they're both actually doing pretty poorly, but also, you know, where's the PTSD diagnosis lie in this, and really should it be broadened? or what importance does it have? And I will not be taking questions now, but if you, we can talk later if you want to contact me there.